it necessarily requires that you have a different approach. The principle of providing value may sound a bit insensitive and transactional at the outset. But remember, it's not that we are bribing people to like us. If our goal is to become likable, we would be smart to recognize that being a useful, helpful, and valuable person is going to increase your perceived charm more often than not. At the very least, you will make yourself attractive enough to gain entry, and sometimes we just need the opportunity to shine, like Sean and his karaoke machine from earlier in this chapter. Takeaways. The principle of being valuable can sound insensitive and transactional, but it simply plays on the fact that humans are selfish creatures. We are, initially at least, motivated to spend time with those we perceive as valuable. Value isn't just money related, thank goodness. Being valuable is about how to be helpful and add to people's lives and impart positive feelings. You can do this by addressing people's practical needs and desires, or their emotional needs and desires. The realistic way of doing this is to think about 5-minute favors for people. Additional ways of adding value are being a social connector, being the planner of a group, and focusing on providing entertainment, in the same way that people enjoy going to a movie. This principle underscores an important theme of considering others and not approaching people from a self-centered perspective. Chapter 6. The Principle of Shallowness. Rick showed up for a job interview in a sloppy, stained outfit with his hair messy. He seemed rushed and unprepared. He also didn't smell great, as if he had skipped showering before rushing to the interview. As a result, he made a poor first impression before he even opened his mouth and didn't get the job. He was actually the most qualified candidate by far, but that didn't matter. After Rick, Derek walked in for the next interview. He was well-groomed, shaved, and had neatly styled hair. He wore a nice suit. He was presentable, and though his skills weren't as impressive as Rick's, he was offered the job immediately. Further, Derek never understood why he was able to get jobs when better qualified people like Rick couldn't. Practically any interview Derek walked into, he walked out with a job offer. Does this mean that life is not a meritocracy? Unfortunately, it's not. Humans operate heavily on a first impression, which is governed by the things that are bound to make you feel shallow. We are judged to be likable or not in a split second. The principle of shallowness recognizes this and sheds light on how we can use it to our advantage, like Derek might. This principle is about understanding what humans look for instinctually. We value appearance and other superficial factors highly. It's not all bad, though. If you know what humans tend to focus on, even if you disagree in principle, then you know exactly what to do for likability and a great first impression. You will know how to tweak your appearance and follow certain rules to have appeal. Don't underestimate how powerful the first impression is. Once yours is created, it's unlikely you will be able to change it without considerable time and effort. That's because a first impression creates a lens for people to view you through. Whatever they see that complies with their impression confirms it further, and whatever they see that doesn't comply with their impression is just an anomaly that isn't representative of your true character. It will color how someone views and treats you. A bad first impression can kill a relationship of any kind before it can even start, while a good first impression gives you a green light to proceed and get to know someone better. We've been taught not to focus on shallow and superficial traits since we were young, but it turns out we shouldn't necessarily follow that advice. First impression management. Fortunately, you can tweak your first impression to make the best first impression possible. Just a few changes will result in a huge shift in how people receive you. A study conducted at Princeton University discovered that people make snap decisions about someone's personality, likability, and trustworthiness within a fraction of a second of seeing someone's face. Janine Willis and Alexander Todorov found that people tend to judge trustworthiness within 100 milliseconds of meeting someone. Furthermore, these judgments tended to stick and were extremely difficult to alter. Ask yourself if this is going to benefit you or harm you. This is why it's important to give in to something seemingly so trivial and silly. If we take our goal to make better impressions versus stick with our principles that a book should not be judged by its cover, then we can instantly see what we should do. For instance, a first impression can be formed just by someone seeing you for the first time while you're scowling. Will they assume that you are a negative person or unpleasant to be around? It sounds outrageous, but it's entirely possible. That negative judgment will always haunt you. Thus, your impression will forever be based on a scowl you wore one day while you were briefly in a bad mood. Before we delve into the meat of this content, researcher Frank Schaub identified 6 common ways we judge and stereotype people based on their physical appearances. These 6 ways emphasize just how many conclusions we jump to are based on a single trait. 1. Looking physically attractive. This person is healthy and more attractive than me. 2. Speaking faster. This person is more competent and intelligent than most others. 3. An easy gait. This person is confident and trustworthy. 4. A baby face. This person is trustworthy. 5. Dressing smartly. This person is successful and smart. 6. Multiple tattoos. This person is promiscuous, unreliable, and untrustworthy. 5 out of those 6 factors are controllable. The only one that is not is whether or not you have a relatively rounded baby face. You might be thinking that being physically attractive is out of your control, but that can also be a product of wardrobe, grooming, and effort. Besides tweaking the above factors, making a good first impression is largely grounded upon who you want to impress. According to a study conducted by Turk, Swensionis, and Fisk, there are downward comparisons where you outrank someone else, and upward comparisons where the person outranks you. When making downward comparisons, you should try to appear more nice and agreeable. On the other hand, in upward comparisons, you try to appear more competent. If you're higher in status, it is more effective to attempt to prove that you're not as cold as the stereotype would suggest. While if you're lower in status, it's better to show that they are as smart or smarter than those above them in status. Making the best impression is more than just looking good. It's about making the other person perceive you as well as possible, according to your status. You need to adapt accordingly. Appearing too smart can make the other person feel outranked, belittled, or intimidated, while appearing too nice can make you seem weak and passive. So you want to emphasize what is best for your position. You may not be overly surprised at what we've uncovered about first impressions thus far. We already know the general importance of maintaining eye contact, open posture, and confident body language in first impressions. We know we shouldn't fidget or shift side to side because it makes us look untrustworthy. We generally know how someone looks when they appear trustworthy and when they appear like someone we wouldn't want to encounter in a dark alley. We have covered the basics of what will make you excel in a job interview. But what else can we learn about that is less obvious, just as important, and likely new? Voice pitch. The pitch of your voice can add to the first impression you make. Pitch, of course, refers to how high or low your voice is. Research out of the University of Glasgow from McLear, Todorov, and Bellin in 2014 found that people made snap judgments in milliseconds about someone just by hearing their voices. Men and women who spoke in higher pitches were often deemed more trustworthy by study participants. Meanwhile, researchers out of the University of Miami, Klofstad, Anderson, and Peters, 2012, found that both men and women tend to associate lower-pitched voices with leadership and select leaders accordingly. The researchers noted, because women on average have higher pitched voices than men, voice pitch could be a factor that contributes to fewer women holding leadership roles than men. McLear and his colleagues advise that people and algorithms may be instructed on the necessary alterations to obtain a desired projection. In other words, learning to control your pitch may be a powerful tool for making the first right impression. Since pitch relates to making a good first impression, you want to control and influence your pitch accordingly. So, if you want to get a job in upper management, speak with a more masculine and deep voice at the interview. Lower pitch might be better because it's traditionally associated with masculine and leadership qualities. Then again, you might not be in a position where you want to appear assertive and dominant. Again, it's best to tailor your characteristics for the impression that you want. Handshake. People form judgments about you based on your handshake worldwide. There are some important Western guidelines to how you should shake hands to present yourself in the best way possible. If you still don't believe that a mere handshake should matter that much, a 2008 study on handshakes found that people with stronger handshakes were often chosen for the job over those with weaker handshakes. Evidently, you can make a good impression with a nice, firm grip. Don't underestimate handshakes. There are three factors that play into a good handshake that will earn you brownie points with others. 1. Firm. A good handshake should be firm, but not hand-crushing. Just squeeze firmly. 2. Warm. A warm hand signals a warm personality, and a cold one signals a cold personality. That's ridiculous. But it's how our brains operate, by association. So keep your hands warm. And you're in. 3. Dry. A dry hand means you're not sweaty or clammy. Not being sweaty means you're calm and confident. Before you shake hands with someone, rub it in your pocket to warm it up and dry it off. Then give a firm handshake, applying some pressure. Wardrobe. How you dress speaks volumes to others. You don't want to dress the wrong way or dress sloppily, but overdressing can be bad too. Despite the age-old advice to dress to impress, you don't always want to do this, especially if you're dressing more nicely than the other person. Being overdressed can imply that you possess authority, which can really make it awkward if you are meeting with someone who is supposed to be your authority. It can create an off-putting power struggle that will ultimately make people think, who do they think they are? You can think of adjusting your wardrobe similarly to how you should address whether to emphasize competence or niceness. What you wear definitely says something about you and your intentions, so you should be mindful of the company you will keep. You can always follow this rule of thumb. Dress similarly to who you want to make an impression on. Dressing similarly is not only appealing, it makes people assume that you understand them and think similarly to them. It also avoids the potential negative implications if you dress much better or much worse. When it comes to making a warm and welcoming first impression, people want to see you're like them, not better or worse than them. Takeaways. This is a principle about our sad reality. We are shallow creatures, though we might not like it, or play the game. Thus, how can we shore up our physical appearance and make a better shallow impression? Studies have identified at least 6 judgments people make based purely on physical appearance, such as having a baby face, an easy gait, dressing well, and speaking quickly. Studies also show that it depends on who you are talking to in terms of relative status. If you are talking to someone of lower status, a better impression will depend on appearing nice. If you are talking to someone of a higher status, a better impression will depend on appearing competent. Vocal pitch has also been shown to make a difference impression-wise. A higher-pitched voice has been associated with trustworthiness, while a lower-pitched voice has been associated with authority and leadership. This should come as no surprise. A handshake's characteristics are used to stereotype and judge. at least in Western cultures. Finally, wardrobe can make a difference as to how you are perceived. Dressing too well or too poorly can open a can of worms. Thus, it is a good policy to dress similarly to who you want to make an impression on, so you can get the benefit of the doubt. Chapter 7. The Principle of Empathy. Marshall was always a rather frigid person. He thought about his own emotions, but never tried to understand how or why others might feel the way that they do. As a result, he often would offend or insult people, even in everyday conversation. He didn't mean to, but he lacked the capability to put himself in other people's shoes and try to imagine what others might feel from his words. He got into a lot of fights, and though most of them were small and meaningless, it didn't win him many friends. The friends he did have tended to ignore this side of Marshall and nicknamed him the robot. Marshall's brother Andrew was the opposite. Somehow he had attained the ability to imagine the emotions other people might be feeling. Andrew was popular and people felt that they could talk to him. He never offended people or dismissed their emotions as his brother did. Often he would clean up his brother's messes and talk to Marshall and point out why people got so mad at him. He would attempt to teach Marshall how to change his ways. One particular instance involved Andrew explaining to Marshall why he shouldn't have told a female friend to simply lose weight when she asked how she was going to fit into a dress for a certain occasion. Had Marshall followed Andrew's example and made the effort to embody empathy, he might have had more friends. Learning and using empathy is not just a way to avoid fights and deepen friendships. It is the capacity to understand exactly what people are feeling and why, and to calibrate yourself to generate more positivity and likability. It grants you the ability to understand and share the feelings of another person. You can relate to how the person feels, even if you have never experienced the same thing yourself. If you can't relate, then at least you can understand logically what they are feeling and why. For instance, if someone seems down after seeing a girl kissing another boy, you can bet that he likes that girl and feels sad that she has chosen another boy to be with. If someone is crying but has just won an award, you can imagine that he or she is crying tears of pride and joy, not of sadness. The skill of empathy allows you to assess situations and make well-informed guesses as to the emotional landscape and causations. It shows others how you truly understand people, and at least can appear to know what they are thinking or how they feel. We like people to understand us and speak the same language. This similarity helps us relate to each other. We already talked about how emotions are important in likability. In this principle, we will hone in on how you can use empathy and emotional intelligence to relate to people on a deeper level. For our purposes, empathy and emotional intelligence are relatively interchangeable. They both concern awareness of emotions and causations. Emotional intelligence is having the ability to effectively perceive, control, and evaluate emotions in yourself as well as in others. To be emotionally intelligent means having the ability to empathize with others, which subsequently helps you better understand people's deepest needs. You display emotional intelligence when you become aware of the emotions you are experiencing. However, awareness is only a start. You must also show that you understand these emotions and the impact that they have on your state of mind. Moreover, you need to recognize how your emotions are affecting the people around you. You also display emotional intelligence when recognizing another person's emotions. In other words, when you empathize with another person, you are displaying emotional intelligence. It can be said to consist of four distinct but interrelated parts. Self-awareness. Awareness of yourself and of your emotional experiences, while understanding how your emotions impact your behavior. Self-management. Having the ability to control your emotional impulses through the simultaneous processing of other emotions. Social awareness. understanding how to empathize and relate to people, understanding people's needs and concerns. Social management. The ability to communicate your emotions and needs while recognizing and respecting those of other people. Empathy is additionally important because it enables you to apply emotional management. Emotional management is where you determine how someone is feeling and react appropriately. For example, if someone is happy but crying after winning an award, you don't want to rush to help the person cheer up because the person isn't sad. You want to adjust your behavior according to someone's emotions, and you can only do that by learning to empathize. Very rarely will people tell you how they are truly feeling, especially in negative states. So you must put yourself in their shoes and judge how they would probably feel based on the situation. This creates situations where people will express themselves and you will just understand. To be empathetic, here are specific guidelines to focus on. Focus on what is good for others. Don't just think about yourself. Ask, will this hurt so-and-so? What are the possible negative repercussions for people other than me? For example, you want to go out and party, but your wife is feeling sick. Will going out hurt her feelings? Is this going to be worth whatever enjoyment you derive from going out? You might consider staying home to take care of her. Think about how you may hurt others and what you can do to be better. This is a surprisingly simple step that most of us neglect sometimes. Try to do more good than harm and understand that your actions have consequences. Think about shared experiences. Many feelings and sentiments are universal. If someone loses a dear friend, for example, you know how that person probably feels since you have been through a loss yourself. Thus, we are not all so different after all, and you can use your own experiences to help you understand others. Try to guess how someone is feeling based on what you have felt and been through before. You may not have lost a dear friend, but you can perhaps imagine when you lost a pet or suffered a huge defeat. They aren't the same magnitude, but you are closer than you were before to understanding someone's mental state of being. Guessing how others are feeling based on your own values helps you understand how to treat someone. Don't judge others. You don't know their full story. When you see a homeless person on the street, don't just assume he put himself there or is a hopeless drug addict who doesn't deserve your loose change. We often make judgments based on incomplete or flat-out wrong information driven by assumptions. Get the full story before you make a decision about someone. Just imagine how you might feel if someone judged you based on your worst moment. Once you know the full story, you may be inclined to be more understanding and kind. Use someone else's perspective. Maybe you don't understand why someone would react as he did when you made a joke. You didn't mean to make any offense, but he took it that way. Try to look at it from his perspective, compendium of experiences, current state of mind and background. What about the joke may have hit a sensitive spot? Just because someone takes a different approach than you does not mean that he is wrong. He just sees things differently based on a very reasonable set of justifications. Try to see how others approach the world and why they do what they do instead of just assuming that they are wrong because they differ from your current perspective. Ask open-ended questions. Get someone to talk to you by asking questions that demand more than yes or no answers, such as, how do you feel today? Or, why did you feel the need to do that? Do you feel that that was the appropriate way to react? This is when you're in information gathering mode. By asking these questions, you can directly hear about someone's emotions and causes for said emotions. There's nothing better than hearing it straight from the horse's mouth. You might even gain something by the way they say things and what they didn't say. Simple yes or no questions allow a person to avoid disclosing emotional information. Open-ended questions let people respond with a story and narrative about how things came to be. This is much more important than knowing that someone is happy or sad or angry. Self-disclose. If someone doesn't want to talk, you might share a bit about yourself to make him feel more comfortable. For example, say, "How do you feel?" When he refuses to answer, go on. "Well, to be honest with you, I feel pretty horrible about all this." He will feel more open to sharing when you already have made yourself vulnerable. Do this to get the ball rolling and create a space of safety for sharing. You might just discover that you have quite a few feelings in common. Find neutral ground. Don't be overly friendly or overly cold. Don't be one extreme or the other. The more neutral you are, the less extreme you seem. This can make the other person trust you more and feel more at ease sharing things with you. For example, when talking to someone after a fight and trying to empathize to strike a resolution, don't smile or frown. Don't appear threatening or overly affectionate. Relax your body to avoid conveying aggression. Use a soft middle tone that is neither yelling nor whispering, and keep appropriate space. Doing this helps you appear less like an enemy or a friend, but rather just somebody he can talk to without fear of judgment. Surprisingly, being completely on someone's side as a close confidant is not always the best move because you'll be acting in a way to confirm their beliefs instead of airing and hearing them out. This can create an overly emotionally charged situation and prolong negativity instead of alleviating it. Don't run ahead of the conversation. This is where you jump to the ending point or conclusion of a discussion on emotions without partaking in the intermediate steps. Those are important steps. You acknowledge the situation, but don't recognize the feelings involved. Even if you see no point in discussing feelings, people often have to talk and work things out for themselves to understand what you see from an objective bystander perspective. For instance, this is when someone tells you they recently ended a relationship, and you reply with, "That sucks, but there are plenty of fish in the sea." This well-meaning advice is actually detrimental and invading because it ignores the emotions and jumps immediately to the conclusion that they must seek out new fish. This is obvious, but it's not what they need to hear at the moment to feel empathized with. So instead of jumping to conclusions and skipping the seemingly extraneous part of asking how they feel, connect with people on their current emotional state and then gently move them to the point you are already mentally at. You could rectify the same situation with the friend who ended a relationship by asking how it happened and how they feel about it. Eventually, you can slowly guide them toward their plans for coping and discovering new species of fish. Practice. The more you practice, the better you will get. Try to use empathy in every situation. Even when your mother is mad and yelling about the dishes, try to imagine how she must feel to come into a room with a sink full of dishes after she has been working all day long. It is a habit to build up, and research has shown that habits can take at least 2 months to create. The point of practicing is to make empathy an unconscious habit you automatically apply to the people around you. Empathy doesn't consist of a small workload, but it is worth the closeness you can build with someone when they feel that you care about them and understand them intuitively. In reality, you may have just been taking informed guesses based on your own experiences, but that doesn't ultimately matter. The principle of empathy is one of your most powerful yet subtle weapons in likability. Takeaways. The principle of empathy is the principle of understanding people's emotional states, the causes, and how you have the potential to contribute negatively or positively. For our purposes, emotional intelligence is mostly interchangeable. Emotional intelligence is similarly about the understanding of causes of emotions in all parties present, and consists of self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and social management. Empathy is more important because it allows you to generate positive and likable outcomes with people on account of understanding their mental states of being. There are a few ways to grow your powers of empathy. These include focusing on what is good for others, thinking about shared values and experiences, not judging others, stepping into other people's perspective and unique set of circumstances, asking open-ended questions to gather information, self-disclosing, using neutral ground and creating an optimal space for sharing, not jumping to the end of a conversation, and practicing it until it becomes an unconscious habit. Chapter 8. The Principle of Abrasiveness. Sally was shy, so she didn't talk to people after meeting them the first time. She was also quite anxious and nervous, so she didn't tend to reply if people followed up, reached out, or invited her to social events. When she did talk to people, she didn't listen much, and she liked to steal the spotlight since she had so few opportunities to feel listened to. You can guess how this impacted Sally's social opportunities. They dwindled quickly because people grew annoyed with her and felt that she was a rather abrasive presence rather than an enjoyable one. Things changed when she stopped relying on others to build her social network for her. This means she began to change her listening behaviors and initiate contact with people more and more. She even invited people over to her home for a dinner party and was pleasantly surprised when everyone she invited accepted. More importantly, she let people talk and focused on hearing them out rather than planning on how she would steal the attention. She noticed a huge change in how people related to her. It seems obvious enough, right? You must avoid being unlikable if you want to be likable. Most of us have toxic, annoying, and repellent habits. Most of them are harmless enough, but every once in a while, you'll come across someone you simply can't stand based on one of their behaviors. Hopefully it's unintentional on their part, but the point is that being abrasive and annoying can overshadow all of your good traits. Hence, the principle of abrasiveness is about momentarily ignoring the fact that we should try to be likable. We should also focus our efforts on eliminating our unlikable, abrasive behaviors. They can matter more than any amount of charm or charisma you might have. There are probably various bad, unlikable, or repulsive habits that you hold in your personality without even realizing it. Those who get to know you find that you are awesome, but how many people will bother to break through your exterior facade and get to know the real you? Not many, because as we know, people base their likability on their first impressions of you. And if they don't care for the first impression you give, they won't bother investing more time in you. This principle might sound like being a filtered version of yourself is the best way to be likable, but that's not the point. The more accurate interpretation is that you should be yourself. But if yourself tends to alienate people, then that's probably something to improve. You aren't changing. Rather, you're improving. For instance, Sally was shy and anxious, but these aren't necessarily negative traits. Her abrasive traits were her tendency to steal people's thunder. If someone does this once or twice, others might not even notice it or care. But if this becomes a pattern of behavior, there is a cumulative effect and people will simply start avoiding you, no matter if your stories are the best or you have the most hilarious jokes. People will begin to associate you more heavily with negativity and annoyance, despite your admirable traits. Unintentional abrasiveness can be easily averted. One-sided relationships. A one-sided relationship is where you are a passive participant. You make the other person, presumably your friend, do everything, take on the burden, and plan everything. Not only that, you depend on your friendship for the entire upkeep of the relationship. This likely isn't because you don't feel that people are worth your time. It's likely because you don't realize what a normal, healthy relationship should look like. Namely, it should look relatively equal in terms of effort and time invested. This goes back to the principle of being valuable. If you aren't reaching out or making an effort, what value are you presenting to people? You are actually making people's lives more frustrating and inconvenienced for the privilege of spending time with you. That's an easy way to stop getting invited to social activities. Make plans and shoulder the burden of building and upkeeping a relationship. This is an easy step to logically understand, but it's harder to follow through on. Make your calendar work for you and set up reminders for how often you should reach out to people, plan something, or even just say hello. You might even take the extra step of marking in your calendar who reached out last, just so you can visually see that you aren't dropping the ball. It can be as easy as a quick text to ask how someone is doing. Otherwise, you run the risk of sitting back while someone does the hard work and only reaching out when you have something you want from others. This becomes painfully transparent quickly, and people will understand that you aren't willing to put in effort toward them. Don't flake. Your friends make plans with you to go out at 6. You put time, money, and effort into getting ready. Just when the clock hits 5:57, your friend calls and says, "Sorry, but I'm not feeling well. I don't think I'll go tonight, but have fun." It feels awkward and disappointing when someone flakes. You don't have to power through social events and torture yourself, but try to let people know as far ahead of time as possible. Flaking is easy, especially as a busy adult. You get excited for something, then when the time comes, work and kids and other responsibilities have you so tired that you can't muster the energy or will to go. Canceling plans is so tempting, but not only is it abrasive no matter how you do it, it also erodes people's trust in you. When you show your reliability, you build trust. Flaking is all about you and wholly inconsiderate to other people. Provide mutual support. A common way that relationships are one-sided is in how much support is given and received. If you're a good friend, you celebrate people's success and help them deal with their failures. You can probably sense when they need support and help. However, does this person only interact with you when they need support and not seek you out when you need it? This can even be when you have great news and they don't congratulate you. Instead of jumping in and hijacking conversations with your problems and complaints, recognize when people have something to say. This is easy because all you have to do is give them the conversational space and silence to speak their mind and then ask questions of them. And resist talking about yourself. So when someone tells you that he is looking into a new house, don't start spouting your opinions on the housing market and lamenting how your salary will never allow you to buy a house. There is obviously a reason they made that statement, and you shouldn't discount that they either have something they want to get off their chest or want to ask you for advice. Acknowledge what he says and let him finish speaking before you put your 2 cents in. Stay on target and make it clear that the focus is on them. Don't be a conversational narcissist and use conversation as your vehicle to shine. If you approach them with that intention, you will surely be unlikable. Again, we run into the theme of being proactive with people's needs and looking outside of yourself. Provide mutual emotional support. A common problem is when one friend is used as an emotional crutch for the other, but when the time comes for reciprocation, suddenly the first friend is nowhere to be found. This is the very epitome of a one-sided relationship. A friendship is meant to benefit and enrich two people. So don't be the selfish, emotionally draining friend that only takes and doesn't give back to the common good. Don't be a fair-weather friend and only be there for the good times or when you need some support. Congratulate someone on good news. Cheer them up when they are sad. Talk them through their pain when they are mad or sad. Dig deep even to find out what is troubling someone and try to fulfill one of your main friendship duties of being there for them. Finally, never dismiss or ignore their emotions. And certainly never tell them not to feel the way that they feel. They have a right to feel a certain way, and your job as a friend is to listen, not to argue or dismiss. In a similar vein, don't use people. When you use someone, you befriend them for some benefit you foresee, and you may not actually care about them or like them. You may tolerate them, but that's surely not the basis for a strong friendship. Sooner or later, you will get caught. People may fall for being used a time or two, but they will get wise to it if you are using them only for your own gain. It really hurts to be used like a tool. One thing many people fail to realize is that their reputations precede them. Avoid only contacting people when you need something. Maybe you do care for a friend or family member, but you only call them up when you need something. It gets to the point where they answer your calls with, "What do you need?" If you find yourself only calling someone when you need a favor, or you are bored and need attention, try to break the cycle and just call to chat. You never need a reason to call or text someone. You can just check in now and then. When someone does something for you, be kind and pay it forward. In fact, make it a point to equalize matters. Pay back your debts when they lend you money, return favors, and always offer to help them as they have helped you. If a friend treats you to dinner, take note and treat them the next time you two go out together. Otherwise, you're a moocher, a leech, and you will drain people dry by taking from them without giving back. Friends do things for each other, but one-sided friendships where only one person does things for the other are unbalanced and unhealthy. Soon the person who does everything will start to resent you for all the debt you have built up. Avoiding this debt in the first place is a sign that you respect others and don't see them as piggy banks to borrow or steal from. Recognize people's limitations. Imagine that someone asked you to do something you weren't comfortable with. Maybe a friend back in high school asked you to shoplift. Or imagine if someone wants to hang out constantly, but you need your space and time away from people. You may feel obligated to do what this person wants just to please him or her because you are friends and friends do things for each other. But when asked to do what you don't want to do, you feel very pressured and even suffocated. You get antsy and uncomfortable. What do? Your friend put you in a tough situation where you probably ended up resenting them. But do we do the same to others? You must learn people's limitations and boundaries. Crossing them will make someone feel like you do when people asked you to shoplift. Overstaying your welcome and acting too dependent and clingy is a real problem in relationships, old and new. People need space, and their definition of space is probably not the same as yours. A person's limitations are parameters on the amount of interaction they feel comfortable with. Someone may not be able to hang out on Fridays because of work commitments, for example. Or they may not be able to play squash with you because of a torn rotator cuff injury. Being mindful of what someone can and cannot do helps you figure out how to spend time with the person in a way that is feasible for both of you. It requires some sacrifice and compromise sometimes. But if you care for the person, you will do that, no questions asked. If you were to imagine that a person's boundaries were set in stone and that grave injury would come to them if you violated them, you might act differently. The problem is we see people's boundaries as malleable and persuadable. If you ignore or violate someone's limitations, you make him or her uncomfortable and strain the relationship. Being overly disrespectful of someone's limitations can hurt him or her to the point of not liking you at all anymore. This is important for you to self-police because not everyone is capable of being assertive and saying no to their friends. A person's boundaries are steadfast rules that dictate what the person is willing to do or willing to tolerate. One friend might not mind you touching him and hugging him, while another friend hates to touch and doesn't allow much more than a handshake. Many people have boundaries about lending you money or doing you favors. Boundaries are in place to protect someone's interests and well-being from others. When you violate someone's boundaries, you hurt that person. Respect boundaries as hard rules that you are absolutely never allowed to violate. For whatever reason, we tend to treat those closest to us as if they have malleable boundaries. A strange reward for closeness. Don't force it. Don't force too many friendships. Trying to be super popular means you are spreading yourself too thin. You don't have enough of yourself to give to everyone, which means everyone will suffer from a fraction of your undivided attention. Or, as you try to please and entertain and talk to everyone, one person may eat up the majority of your attention, leaving only table scraps for everyone else. This is going to be detrimental, especially if you set the wrong expectations with people and then continually fail to live up to them. You can't be everything to everyone, so it's a disservice to your friends to try. And of course, it is supremely unlikable because you make people feel like second-class citizens or last resorts or fallback plans all the time. For example, at any social gathering, you will notice that you can have deep conversations with only so many people in one night. Or you can have a number of shallow and brief conversations with literally everyone at the party. You will ignore a lot of the guests if you just focus on those few deep conversations. But these types of interactions, not the shallow interactions, actually create friendship. It's the same principle when you are trying to be with too many friends at once. You can really only have a few deep friendships. 3 to 5 is a realistic number. You can give your A-plus effort to that many people. If you try to please more, then you will fail, and all of your friends will suffer. Don't force it. The 3 to 5 number may remain the same, but the people that inhabit it are likely to be constantly changing throughout your life. Another thing to not force is friendships in general. This might be an odd statement, but the fact is, we are not destined to be close with everyone we come across. Some people are only meant to be acquaintances, and some people are meant to be passing friends or friends of convenience. Generally, there are 3 types of friends that people in your life will fall into. Inner circle or close friends who know the details of your personal life and talk to you regularly. Regular friends whom you like and whom you meet up with now and then, and who know a bit about you but not the very personal details. And acquaintances, who are not close to you and know little about you, but will help you out or engage in friendly banter when they see you. So you might have your 2 best friends, whom you have known since you shared a dorm in college. Then you have your regular friends, Fred and Susan, who you meet up with on weekends to go bowling. Finally, you have countless acquaintances, at work, at church, at the bowling alley, and at the gym, where you chat and banter for a few minutes. You remember their names, but can't really remember the names of all of their kids or spouses. There are so many reasons why friends may not ever advance beyond their normal point. It is usually not personal. People may intersect paths for a brief moment in time, but drastically change trajectories afterwards. You may want to be friends with someone based on what they represent, but not who they are. You may simply find that you only work well together in certain contexts, and interactions don't go so smoothly outside of those contexts. Whatever the case, you may not feel the pull to upgrade this person into the next level of friendship, no matter how cool they are objectively or to other people. And that's okay. Don't force it. A big factor in friendship compatibility is varying levels of social appetites. Maybe someone has a social appetite to stay in while you prefer to go out. So you two have difficulties finding time when you both can hang out doing something you both enjoy. You might be the person that wants to hang out with somebody once a week, but they might be the person that wants social time once a month or every day. Since it is statistically unlikely that you will exactly match, you will almost always be either overdoing it or underdoing it. There is no perfect solution to this except to be nice but honest about this. You cannot force a friendship if you don't match someone right away, and forcing it will only cause you to fake it and change yourself unnecessarily. Just accept the friendship as it is meant to be naturally, whatever stage it ends up in. Think. Finally, in the principle of abrasiveness, it's important to simply not be abrasive. The previous points in this chapter were about the ways in which we might indirectly turn people off. But abrasiveness is also just the way you speak to others and the words you use. As such, it might be productive to run your thoughts through a filter, conveniently called the THINK acronym. Before you speak, use THINK and evaluate what you are about to say. Is it true? Make only comments that are true. True to what you feel, true to your beliefs, and true to what you know about the world. When everyone communicates in truth, it allows us to forge connections in openness and trust. If it's not true, what is your purpose in saying it? It will likely just result in miscommunication and eventual tension. Speaking untruths and lies will get you caught eventually and make you appear manipulative. Is it helpful? Give helpful comments, especially when someone is asking for your opinion or advice. speak with the intention to help and assist people with their needs or desires. This stands in stark contrast to the intention to question, confuse, or tear people down. Think about the purpose of your statements and ask whether you are making them to help people or to feel better about yourself in some way. As we know, if you seek to help, you become someone with value. Is it inspiring? Is what you say going to trigger people into action? And if it is it going to be through a positive way, or is it going to be fear-based or manipulative? Inspiring is when you cheer people on, inject positivity into their lives, and make them feel capable. Again, this goes to your intentions when speaking to others. Are you trying to make them feel good about themselves or bad? If you find that you're not inspiring, you are probably making them feel bad. Providing emotional support is inspiring. Is it necessary? Is it necessary that someone hear what you are saying? This can work in two ways. First, if you are delivering negative feedback, just how much is necessary to get your point across? Deliver that and stop immediately, because nothing else is necessary and just serves to hurt people. If it's not necessary, then pick your battles and shut your mouth. Second, are you talking about topics that matter, or are you staying on shallow formalities? The latter is unnecessary and empty. Is it kind? This speaks to the old adage that if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. People judge, criticize, and insult without a second thought. This is increasingly popular as we become more and more accustomed to internet anonymity. With every comment you make, strive to examine what your purpose is and what the impact will be. Chances are, if you're not speaking to be kind, you're speaking out of maliciousness or uncontained emotion. Strive to be kind and use kind words and compliments in abundance. This might seem like a heavy filter to use, but it's not meant to be used simultaneously all the time. The value of think is to gain self-awareness through the act of asking ourselves questions and examining our intentions. Hopefully it becomes habitual over time to consider the abrasiveness and impact of your words on others. And of course, if you run through these questions and find that, more often than not, you aren't thinking, it's time to either change your thought patterns or be more accepting of silence. We constantly speak simply to fill space and avoid awkwardness, but that can be more detrimental than beneficial. Filtering yourself in this way doesn't have to feel forced or artificial. All you're doing is making sure that you have the emotional impact you want on others. If you want to have a negative one, then by all means, carry on. Takeaways. Although it may not seem like it, this is an extremely important chapter. Sometimes it pays to be less abrasive and annoying than charming. Charming may open doors for you, but being abrasive and unlikable will shut them even more quickly. Most of the ways we are abrasive and unlikable are relatively indirect. They are actions that make people want to avoid us and stop contact. One such way is maintaining one-sided relationships in terms of effort, emotional support, and time invested. If this occurs, then you may become known as someone who reaches out only when they want something, a user. Be sure to proactively provide emotional support to others, especially if you have just unloaded your emotions onto someone else. Recognize that everyone has different limitations and don't overstay your welcome. This applies to all avenues, but especially social appetites and desire for interaction. Everyone has their own boundaries, so don't try to force past them because you'll only be met with annoyance and resentment. Finally, use the THINK acronym to evaluate your words and their impact on people to not be abrasive. THINK stands for true, helpful, inspiring, necessary, and kind. Get into the habit of running your thoughts through this type of filter for increased likability. Chapter 9. The Principle of Worthiness. Jeffrey usually has a lot to say. He reads the news every morning and always seems to be consuming media whenever he has free time. He avoids gossip sites and reality television, but he generally learns a few facts each day. No wonder he can connect and relate with people on just about any topic that comes up. Furthermore, he is able to offer his perspectives on the topic. Other people might just answer with one-word replies and not offer insight or analysis. Jeffrey is a blast to talk to because he always seems to be on the same page, and if he's not, he's willing to be curious and learn. You can be Jeffrey or the second person. What's the articulable difference? Jeffrey is worth knowing. He's knowledgeable, well-read, and an interesting conversationalist because of his ability to discuss different options and perspectives. He's not just putting on an act. He is genuinely a curious person who thirsts for knowledge and information. These are likable qualities that we seek out in others. Here we have another straightforward principle. The principle of worthiness is that, to be likable, you should be a person worth liking. It sounds cynical, but it's a truism that we never think about. Likable people are likable for a reason. They are interesting, positive, knowledgeable, charming, or any other number of positive traits. What positive traits do you possess that would make you likable? You don't have to be knowledgeable and curious like Jeffrey, but being likable is much easier when you possess traits worthy of being liked. There is no substitute. A more succinct way to put that is that you should become the type of person you would like to get to know. What kind of person do you seek out? Cultivate habits and behaviors and improve yourself so that you are exactly who you would find likable, instead of pretending or relying on party tricks. You'll hear similar advice when you enter the dating advice genre. People play games and use tricks such as waiting a few days to return a call or pretending to be busier than they really are. This is all a ruse designed to make people appear attractive and busy. But in reality, people could just spend their time becoming that person they are pretending to be. Likeability will come more easily if you simply become a likable version of yourself, eventually, instead of memorizing an action plan for likability. It's easier than it sounds because we know there are certain traits and behaviors that are more likable than others. If you're likable, you generally have the ability to introduce people to new knowledge or experiences. Think about Jeffrey from the above example. You preferred him over the other person because he was able to introduce something to your life. You prefer someone who actively skydives over someone who watches television all day. You prefer someone who has something to teach you in an interesting subject. Therefore, this chapter focuses on ways to have interesting knowledge and also create memorable experiences with people. If you get rid of notions such as wanting to impress people or be perceived in a certain way, you'll quickly find that the process of becoming able to introduce people to new things produces a very likable person. It leads to someone who is worthy of being liked, just on account of what he does. Pursue the act. Someone who is worthy of being liked has their own life and pursues what they want. Sitting at home, working 24/7, or always talking about the same things won't make you interesting. In fact, it makes you seem like you have nothing going on in your life, and that may be an accurate statement. Everyone has everyday experiences and isn't interested in rehashing them with others. Most likely, when people ask you what you've been up to, they don't want to hear you say, work. They may laugh and smile, but the conversation stops there because they know any other details from you will probably be boring. But imagine how you could get the conversation to take outrageous twists and turns if you said something like, I went skydiving. It was so exhilarating dropping 14,000 feet through the air. My chute almost didn't deploy, but it finally did. Whew! Imagine the questions and comments people would have. But the point here is that you cared enough to take initiative and pursue an interest of yours, not that you are bragging about something you did. That's a worthy trait, and it results in more engagement and people taking interest in you. If someone asked you about your weekend and your honest answers provoke these types of responses in people, then you're on the right track.